today on Rambling About Cars. 0-60 in 1.79 seconds. That's what you get with the Pininfarina Battista. And we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the new Abarth 500e, little electric hot hatch. Interesting news from Mazda. Multiple things from Mazda we're going to talk about. We got a bunch of emails, comments that we're going to go through, and things in the automotive realm that we're thankful for since we're coming up to Thanksgiving in the United States. So without further ado, you know what time it is. It's podcast time. I am Christopher Smith. Chris Bruce, it's just you and me, man. One more time. Yep. But hey, we got lots to talk about, even though it is a little bit of a slower week. It always is leading up to Thanksgiving.
Right. The American automakers, I don't think we have anything from an American automaker this week. It's, you know, they all take the week off for valid reason.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. We got the big holiday. We all get a long weekend. I'm looking forward to that because it's going to warm up. And I've got a much bigger house to decorate now. I am in serious trouble. I have to like hire a crane to get some of these 60-foot tall trees. I will be Clark W. Griswold before all is said and done. Anyways.
Very fun.
Crickets.
Let's talk about this a second just because I like BSing with you. Are you still going to have, so I should say for everyone, when Smith lived in South Dakota, he had like, Smith was the friend to all neighborhood cats. And he had like a little cat sanctuary during the winter in his backyard.
Yep.
Am I wrong? No,
you're not wrong. I've always been a passionate conservationist when it comes to wildlife. Being in town like that, there were just a lot of strays in the neighborhood. In fact, the cat that's with us now was, I believe, an abandoned stray in the neighborhood. And she just started to hang around the house and I kind of made friends with her. And then she came inside one day and decided she didn't want to leave. So that was a few years ago. But yes, I set that up. Not doing that here because I'm much more rural. There just aren't. Okay. I mean, there aren't. I mean, unless I want to set something up for the deer. But you know what? They live here. They know how to handle things. They're on their own. So yeah, no shelters like that. But yeah, out in South Dakota, right there in town, there were just a lot of stray animals in the neighborhood. So
sure.
Makes sense. Not doing that this year. This year, no, the big project this year will be turning this abode into the ultimate Charlie Brown Christmas house.
Okay.
I'm a big fan. Big fan. Good grief. Good grief.
Well,
speaking of big fans, that's not a segue. That's
not
terrible.
No, especially not for this car. Well, maybe for this brand, maybe not for this car. We can talk about that. We're starting alphabetically tonight just because this car begins with an A, and I don't know if the rest of the show is not going to be alphabetical, but this one is, damn it. We're starting with the Abarth 500e, which is the hot hatch version of the Fiat 500e that we just recently kind of saw in, what was the event that we just saw that? It wasn't Detroit, obviously. It was LA Auto Show. That's what it was.
Yep. And of course, the E stands for electric, and you're thinking, well, can you hop up an electric car? Yes, you can, because this one has.
We're going to talk about it. I don't know. I feel like maybe they could have hopped it up a bit more, but hey.
It's a small car. It's got 155 horsepower from its electric motor. It just turns the front wheels, 173 pound-feet of torque. That's up. 500E is 117 horsepower, I believe. Looking at my notes. Yep. Hey, I remember that.
117 horsepower and 162 pound feet for the base 500E for the Abarth, the hot hatch. I'm just going to repeat exactly what you said. 155 horse, 173 pound feet of torque. So
a little bit more
like for an Abarth. I expected more, I guess. Maybe that's wrong of me. Maybe I shouldn't have. But
I mean, it's not just power. I mean, they what else do they do to it? They say. Quicker than the Abarth 695 from, and this is where it gets kind of interesting, right?
It's
quicker than the Abarth 695, which was the previous hot Abarth with the turbo 1.4 liter engine. It's quicker from 20 to 40 kilometers per hour, which is 12 to 25 miles per hour.
Exactly. From 12 to 25. So if you're in a school zone, by God, you are going to be the king of the drag strip in every school zone in America.
That's a really specific range. It's very odd. They do say it's 1 second quicker around the Misto Alfa Romeo circuit. I'm not familiar with that racing circuit, but it's a second.
Also not familiar with
that. It's circuit. A second quicker around that than the Abarth 695. So I mean, they're trying to give some context. It's still a fun vehicle. 0 to 60 is what? 7 seconds flat, I think they say 0 to 60. Yeah. Right. Sorry, 0 to 62, 0 to 100 kilometers an hour.
100 kilometers.
7 seconds same flat. Difference. It's 2 seconds quicker than the regular 500e. So for such a small power bump, I mean, it's reasonably quick in a straight line.
With electric motors, it's kind of because you get that torque immediately, that small gains kind of gain you more than you would expect is kind of what I've seen from covering EVs. Like you were saying, so 42 kilowatt hour battery pack, it can DC fast charge at up to 85 kilowatts. And I actually think this number is actually legitimately impressive. 5 minutes at 85 kilowatts gets you 25 miles of charge. And it can, in 35 minutes, you can go to 80%.
Yeah, that's a pretty good number.
Those are, you know, it's not the biggest battery, but those are good charging numbers, at least from the EVs I've seen. That's not that bad. So,
no,
you know.
No, not bad at all.
And it looks kind of cool.
It does look cool. The course, they have some Abarth visual upgrades. They didn't say anything about suspension tuning, or did I miss that?
Not that I've seen.
Which, I mean, it's a small car. It's already going to be pretty tight, right? It's already going to have, I don't know if it'll have a go-kart feel, but I mean, it's a zippy little hot hatch, right? It's got 18-inch wheels, Alcantara seats, wireless phone charger. I mean, it's got some decent equipment in there. It's also available in the fabric roof convertible version, right? I think this is hilarious. It has a 360-degree camera, which for me, it's such a small car. It's like, well, I'm the 360-degree camera, right? I mean, can I just look at a car that small?
And if you look at it, the B pillars are so small that you should just be able to look around it like, I could see just about 360 degrees here. Yeah, I mean, okay. Just
go full Exorcist, and you are the 360-degree camera.
Right. The one thing we don't know about this yet is U.S. availability. We were like we were talking about the LA Auto Show. The 500e is coming to the United States. The Abarth version still a mystery. So, yeah, right now we just don't know. They didn't say anything about it in the announcement. The Abarth brand is kind of fallen by the wayside in the U.S. You know, they had the Abarth, they had the 124, they had the 500 for a while, which I know our coworker Brandon Turkus, he loved that car for
a lot of people. A lot of people that I know that have driven one or even own one just absolutely love it. I'm not surprised you don't see more of them. One thing that we didn't mention that Abarth did say in the release, and we haven't heard it yet, it does have a fake sound generator to generate the sound of a gas engine that can be turned off. Now, we don't know what that sounds like, but I'm curious, Ramblers, if you want to give us some feedback. And Bruce, where can they give us feedback?
Podcast at MotorOne.com or Motor One Podcasts on YouTube or MotorOne.com every week, the post we put up every Friday.
I'm going to take another 2 weeks off. You got this, man. I'm curious, anybody that's driven EVs, have you been in one where you preferred the generated sound over just the silence of the actual powertrain? I'm curious to see how this sounds because they say it simulates a gas engine. Other EVs we've seen, okay, they talk about the sound generators creating a sound maybe similar but not exact, you know, something to separate it. I'm curious to hear what this sounds like, but I'm also grateful that there's the option to shut it off. Because I don't know, my EV experience, I didn't want to hear any of the auto generated stuff. It sounded strange, I guess. So I'm curious to hear what
other people. I agree with that, but I'm going to rip off an idea from my father here real quick. And that is, okay, EVs, obviously, they're never going to sound like a combustion engine. So let's take advantage of that and let's create let's let this Abarth sound like, you know, a 500 Abarth from the 60s, or it belongs to Stellantis. Let's let this sound like a 427 Hemi, you know, put that sound out the back.
Oh, Bruce, you're about to get so much hate mail.
Is it not 427?
426. No, I'm thinking 426 oh. Hemi. Ford had the 427 and Chevrolet GM had a 427. Podcast at motor1.com, everybody. You can tell Bruce. Shame come on, you don't know your Hemis. Is that got a Hemi? Hey, you're close. It's an interesting idea. I thought you were going to say something like, why don't we just be really fun and make it sound like the Jetsons?
Okay, sure. Why not?
Wouldn't that be kind of hilarious? Driving down the road? Or
if it can sound like anything, why not let it sound like anything? Like, well, you know,
once upon a time, this person that I knew in high school that was not me in any way, shape or form.
Okay, sir.
Used to put in a sound effects CD of B-52s taking off. And I would put.
And this wasn't you,
sorry, not me. Somebody not me would put the windows down at traffic lights in a Ford Taurus. And I've never owned any Ford Taurus in my life. So it's certainly not me.
Not a single one.
And would turn the stereo up and you'd pull away to the sound of 8 jet engines spooling up. And would that not be kind of cool in some EVs? I don't know.
I actually think it would be. Like, here's the thing. If you can make it sound like anything, then let the person who owns it decide. I want it to sound like, you know, a post-war bomber taking off.
I'm surprised that hasn't come up yet, because think about all the various customization features you have in vehicles like Mercedes, you can choose from, like, you know, 24 different interior colors for your lighting.
Even in a Mercedes, you can have so many different smells covering the interior. Yes. Why can't I have different sounds like that?
That's gotta be coming. That's gotta be in the pipeline somewhere with somebody, unless there's some weird legal aspect involved where, if we make it sound like something that's too distracting, it could cause a crash. But I mean, if you're driving down the road and get hit with like a shot of, you know, rose scent up your nose, isn't that going to cause an accident possibly? I don't know.
So I know NHTSA has been on an ongoing thing with Tesla, because Tesla had a thing where it would emit different sounds and you could kind of select the different sounds. So that would be the exterior noise. Right. To my knowledge, there hasn't been anything about interior noise.
Yeah. Though. I mean, how could there be anything? You're listening to the radio, right?
Sure.
Whatever's on the radio.
Right.
Exterior sound, I can totally see that. If you give people customization on that, I mean, how long before?
Just like a long sound as it goes down the, you know, like that's
right. Yeah,
someone's gonna do that. But like inside, why can't I make it sound like any car I want it to sound like?
Right. There's some potential there that could be interesting for EVs. But for right now, we have the Abarth with fake gasoline engine sounds that you can turn off. They might sound good. It might not. We don't know. We're very curious to find out.
And we also don't know if it's coming to the US. I hope it does, because the Abarth brand is really cool. That has a very, very long history. You know, they've done super cool products in the past, even in the recent past. And it seems like a shame for Stellantis to kind of leave it just kind of wither on the vine. I hope it comes back and they do something interesting with that nameplate.
No, I hope to see it here too. Very much so. Very much so. What do we want to talk about next? How about we jump over to the other electric car, or the other electric car that we're going to talk about? The very fast one, the Pininfarina.
The super fast one. Okay. Yeah.
The world record holding Pininfarina Battista.
The fastest one, if you will.
Well, the fastest accelerating.
Right. The quickest as our
if we want to get into that discussion of quick versus fast, I don't know if we have enough time in this one.
We don't.
Some people say there isn't a difference. I say there is, but that's for another time. We have the Pininfarina Battista. To refresh your memory, this is Pininfarina's all electric hypercar, quad motor, 1,900 horsepower, 1,600 and some. I got to flip my page over here. 1,696 pound feet of torque. Deliveries are underway on this. They're only building 150 of them. We now have official stats leading up to this point. Pininfarina just said 0 to 60 in under 2 seconds.
They were right.
They went through at Dubai, the racetrack in Dubai. And they did a bunch of testing and they chose the car's debut, in Dubai and Saudi Arabia to announce this 0 to 60. 1.79 seconds. And Pininfarina says that's the record.
So real quick,
fastest production car to 60.
As I was preparing for this episode, my watch has a chronometer on it. I'm going to show the people what 1.79 seconds feels like. So everyone be quiet. Here is 1.79 seconds. There. That's it.
That sounded longer than 1.79. That was really? That felt like forever. One.
Are you joking right now or not? I can't tell.
One. I don't know. Maybe it's the whole I'm staring at the pot. Why doesn't it boil effect? But sure, it's fast. It's 1.79 seconds. I was talking with my wife about this actually earlier in the week. I mean, that has to be traction limited. We're at a point now where everything is really just traction limited. Because there are cars with a lot less horsepower that are almost as fast to 60. But that's not where it ends. 0 to 120, and this is more impressive to me, 0 to 120 miles per hour, 4.49 seconds. So it's getting to 120 in about the same time a Mustang GT or Camaro SS gets to 60. Mm-hmm. Previous gen Mustang GT, the new one is a little bit quicker, but yeah. That's really quick. Top speed is 217 miles per hour. That's not a record. I should say, they say Pininfarina 0 to 60, 0 to 120 records. Top speed 217, still rarefied air, not the fastest production car.
Right.
But per Pininfarina, it's the quickest. So if you fall in the camp of they are different things, that's kind of a good example, I think, to make my case. There's another record though, and this is also impressive considering this is a battery electric vehicle, which we know are heavier than, combustion vehicles. Braking 100 kilometers an hour to zero, which is 62 miles per hour to zero, 32 meters, which is 102 feet. And that's a pretty good performance too. Pininfarina says that's a record. They said that's a record for EVs.
That's got to be close to a record for a production vehicle in general, I would suspect. It's got to be close. Like I said, you stole my thunder because I was going to bring up that number. No.
Sorry, I'll let you thunder on the rest of the program here.
There you go. like me, you watch the old Motor Week, you know, their YouTube channel. They're really good. They put up old episodes all the time. Mm-hmm. And one of their things for, hell, I think that show started the 1980, I believe, is the first season of that, is 60 to zero stopping time, or 60 to zero stopping distance, I should say. And sub 120 feet is always pretty good. If you're in a performance car, maybe a tad over, you know, 100 feet. For a vehicle like this that weighs this much, that is stopping in 102 feet and can still go to 60 in 1.79 seconds, is just, it's so impressive. You know, and I'm sure it's the regenerative braking. It's, you know, the brakes themselves, the mechanical brakes. Like, the numbers that this car is putting down is just...
They're phenomenal numbers.
I mean
they're phenomenal numbers, but you know, again, you could argue that we passed the point of getting that power to the ground a long time ago just with traction control, because even with something in something with 600 or 700 horsepower without some sort of launch control, even with launch, I mean, the whole point of launch control is it modulates the power that goes to the ground. You're not using all of that power. You're not using all of that 600 horsepower to launch. if you put all of that power to the ground, it's just going to spin the tires unless you're on like a prepped surface. So a vehicle like this, obviously all-wheel drive, the extra weight of the battery, a good set of sticky street tires, that's going to help it go. But I don't think, I mean, at this, it's sort of like Nürburgring lap times maybe. At this point, it's not really about the performance of the car. It's about the driver being able to get some of it to the ground or get enough of it to the ground to go quicker. So, I mean, I feel like we're at that point, at least 0 to 60 wise, where, okay, look, I can go 0 to 60, 1.7 seconds. I'm a little bit quicker. Well, yeah, but a different day with a different driver, with different atmospheric conditions, different tire temperatures, maybe the other car could go 1.74, you know, we're right there. So, I mean, not to take anything away from Pininfarina, this is a fantastic car, an amazing performance car. Right now, fastest accelerating production car you can get, faster, the shortest braking EV you can get. It does cost $2.2 million, though.
It does. They're making 150 of them, and the price is $2.25 million.
I was good at 2.2, but not 2.25. That's
yeah, that extra $50,000 that was killing you.
I don't want to sell another kidney. I only have two.
Yeah. This is a car that you and I are basically never going to see in real life. You know, we'll see videos of them and stuff like
maybe,
that.
Maybe, never know. You might catch one. You might catch one at a show somewhere, or
maybe, you know. But it's that type of thing where the performance always starts on top and then it trickles down slowly. And we're already seeing, we've talked about the Model S Plaid and the Lucid Air. What's the top line Lucid Air? The Dream? Am I wrong?
The Dream. I think that was the first one. There've been two, just massively quick Airs. I think the grand Touring right now is near the top. I apologize, but I know what you're saying there.
You know, that even amongst those EVs, you're not that far off. You're like kind of kissing that number for a even lower price. And then I was writing about the Kia EV6 GT today, which I believe is, I don't have the number in front. It's right around $65,000 with the delivery. And even that is 3.25 seconds, which is still so much faster. Like, you even think about like the highest of the high points of the muscle car era of the late 60s or 70s. And those cars couldn't touch that. Like,
no, right.
None of those are doing 0 to 60 in 3.25 seconds or something like that. Like, it's just,
well, you know, but here's the thing. The ones that went to the drag strip.
Okay.
With drag, like,
You're right.
Like a 70 LS6 Chevelle, you go to the drag strip, you put some proper drag radials on there, and you get a good surface where you can get all of that power down. And I'm betting it's 0 to 60 is right there in the sub-4 second range, because those cars had massive power. But
you're right. But with a Lucid or a Tesla, it's got, you have occupancy for 4, you've got good air conditioning, you've got traction control and stability control, and, you know,
brakes,
brakes,
like functional brakes. I mean, cars back then, their brakes weren't quite as good for their power, but
no,
another discussion for another time.
Good on you, Pininfarina, fantastic numbers. I love to see it happening, but you know, I'm sure there is some automaker eyeing these numbers, like squinting at them closely and like, we can do just a little bit better. And that's always the way it goes. So, yeah.
Well, do you think Mazda can do, better? Not right now. Not right now. But they do have arguably the greatest sports car of the modern generation with the MX-5 Miata.
Yeah. I think that's fair.
I mean, you could, well, that's why I say arguably, because I mean, there would be some people that would say, the S2000 maybe was the greatest.
Affordable. You could,
it didn't have the same run, but I mean, there've been some good sports cars of the modern era. The Miata was right there. did we maybe get a glimpse of the next generation MX-5 today, which has, we're recording this is actually Tuesday instead of the normal Wednesday. So this just came out. You can go to MotorOne.com, read all about it. This is the Mazda Vision Study. Right. And it made an appearance at the very end of a video presentation by Mazda president and CEO Akira Marumoto.
Yep. It was their fiscal year financial report, as I remember.
Right. And they actually announced quite a few things and a little bit of a change of course to go more in the direction of electrification. We'll talk about it. More here in a little bit. But a little bit on this vision study, Bruce.
Yeah. So no technical specs here. They kind of just, as you said, they kind of threw this out at the end of their presentation. But everyone is saying, wow, is this the future of the Miata? And you look at it. Okay, first off, it's not a convertible. So you're like, it's fixed roof. It looks so Lotus. Like it screams Lotus,
You look at the front though. That's a Miata front to me. That's an MX-5, a current gen MX-5 front to me.
Oh, definitely. And the shape of that grill is very much Mazda Cosmo, the way it's kind of flat and then comes down. Like there are vintage Mazda cues while also being incredibly modern. And then it's just the smooth, really supple shape. It is a fantastic looking vehicle. And yeah, it's all we know is it's called the Vision Study model. So Mazda's not tipping their hand here. They're not saying anything, but you look at this vehicle and you imagine, what would the next generation Miata look like? You would hope it would look like this. Mm-hmm. And you combine that with, and Smith, I'm sure you know this, that we have been seeing, I think two spy shots posts we have. One, at least one, I think two, of a vehicle that we think is a test mule for the next gen Miata. And so it just kind of all works together and you end up with, could Mazda kind of be showing us a little bit of what they're expecting, a little bit of what they want to do? And honestly, if this is what a next gen Miata looks like, sure. That looks fantastic.
I think it looks pretty good. The question on everybody's mind is, okay, well, is it electric or is it not? That's something that I guess we can discuss a little bit right now before we go over to the other electrified Mazda news. Because as we were saying, this was presented right at the end. It was about a 36 minutes, about a half hour presentation. And then there was this 5-minute video at the end. And Mazda did actually also post two photos of that car on their media site. So, it wasn't a case of, we're just going to slip this in the video and see if anybody notices. They actually singled the car out. So they absolutely wanted people to notice. But the presentation was really about steering Mazda towards electrification, which, of course, Mazda hasn't really done yet. They're a little
behind. We're going to talk about that in a second. Yeah, they're a little behind the curve.
They're a little behind. It was announced Mazda is going to invest $10.6 billion towards electrification going forward. They announced a bunch of partnerships with different companies for batteries, semiconductors, electric powertrains. So they're good. They have a plan to go forward. They're going to do it in three phases. The first phase, from reading the press release and reading the presentation from CEO Marumoto, the first phase is right now, and it's really developing stuff, right? Developing stuff, shoring up their supply lines, trying to
so late. Like it's
like manufacturers, other automakers were doing this, a few years ago. So that's phase one. Phase two starts, I think, in 2025, where they're moving forward with more technology. You're going to see some more plug-in hybrid models coming in, but they're still sticking with internal combustion. Really has their bread and butter. Up through phase three, where they're going to then start launching more full battery electric vehicles. In phase three, I feel like I'm talking about a Marvel movie. Phase three starts in 2028. So it's going to be a few years yet before we're seeing fully electric vehicles from Mazda really being brought forward. But something else in that presentation that I thought was very interesting that could relate a little bit to this vision study that we've been looking at here, they want to have all of their new Mazda vehicles by 2040, well, starting in 2040, have zero fatalities in the event of any accidents. So they're kind of going that road with Volvo, really trying to bump up their safety, doing a lot of work on driver assistance safety systems. Starting in 2040, they want to have their vehicles zero fatalities, not just for occupants, but other people surrounding. And as I was reading that and I was thinking about this concept, it does have a fixed roof. And with a convertible, obviously, there are more safety issues with a convertible just because you don't have any roof structure, right? Even with even if it's a retractable hardtop, it's still not going to be as structurally sound as just a fixed roof. So if you want to have zero fatalities in your vehicles, can you have a convertible? That's just pure going off the top of my head here, but it certainly made me think about it. Combining that statement with what we're seeing here, I mean, I don't know if I was an automaker, I don't know if I could make a statement like that thinking, okay, we still have a convertible.
Well, so Smith, it's
interesting.
You're a student of automotive history, much like I am. Mm-hmm. And the whole idea of whether or not convertibles are unsafe, and oddly, back then, it was the opposite reason, whether it was the occupants of the actual vehicle rather than the people they might hit. But, you know, that's the reason we got the Targa top from Porsche. That's the reason we got T-tops, things like that, is that there was a fear that the convertible was going to be made illegal in the United States. The United States was a major automotive market. And so we had automakers come out with these different solutions. So it's interesting now, 50, 60 years later, we're now kind of back at the same point, just from a different perspective, that rather caring about the person behind the wheel, we're caring about the person who might be struck by the vehicle.
Right.
That it's interesting. And I guess I don't know, you know, we figured out a solution last time that, you know, your T-tops, your Targa tops, your things like that, your removable roof structures. Does that mean the death of the convertible? I hope not. But I don't know.
It's something interesting that occurred to me as I was writing up that piece just about
that makes sense.
The presentation and thinking, okay, well, you know, this closing video of this presentation, which was about the video itself was about 5 minutes long. It started with footage of former and current generation MX-5s, roof down, hair blowing in the wind, definitely an ode to their just adorable, incredible sports car. And then it transitions over to this concept. So clearly in their video, they're making a connection. And of course the concept here, fixed roof, just some food for thought. It might make for an interesting discussion if an automaker wants to have zero fatalities in their vehicle. And I'm not just talking about Mazda here, but any automaker, does that leave room for a convertible? Something to think about. Let us know what you think. Podcast at motorone.com. Let us know what you think. Motor One Podcast on YouTube. Comment there. Comment on our article that goes up every Friday at motorone.com. We do have some more Mazda news to talk about, though, Bruce.
We do. Yeah.
Electric Mazda news.
Electrified.
Electrified and rotary. Ooh, everybody's excited for a new RX-7. We're going to have a rotary hybrid RX-7. No. We're not.
No, we're not. So this comes from the Motor1.com German edition. Our coworker, Roland Hildebrandt, he originally came up with this piece. I translated it. And apparently at the Brussels Motor Show in January, on January 13th, 2023, which is what? Six weeks away? 6-7 weeks, something like
2023 that. 2023 is almost here, man.
Yeah. Mazda will debut the rotary. How can I say this? They will debut a version of the MX-30, which is their electric crossover, with a rotary engine range extender. And let me be super, super specific. This is not a rotary powered version. This is not a hybrid like you would think of, like the Prius we were talking about last week, or, you know, other vehicles like that. The rotary will run at a constant RPM, and it will act solely to charge the battery. And then that will obviously give power to the electric motor, and that'll let the vehicle go. And we've been hearing about this vehicle. As I wrote about it in the story, it was first announced, it was first rumored in early 2020. It was officially announced in late 2020. And now we are finally seeing the fruits of all those, fruits of all that work. So no, this is not a rotary powered MX-30, fortunately or unfortunately, depending on how you look at things. This is its own separate thing. And I am
you're struggling with this, what I can tell.
I'm cautiously optimistic. I have to be. Because so one of the main things, and you sold your Mazda 6, right? You are no longer a Mazda owner.
Correct. I sold the Mazda 6 in South Dakota before moving to Michigan. I am still looking for a car that I'm going to give you an update later on.
Very good.
But I am a Mazda fan.
Right.
Never a huge rotary fan. I never really got the rotary. Other than, okay, it's a smaller engine. It can be mounted lower down, gives you better performance, weight distribution, that sort of thing. But it's a smooth running engine, but it seemed like the negatives outweighed the positives, right?
It always depends on, you know, what you need and what you're going to do with it. It's the rotary. It's physically small, but it's also very thirsty in terms of what an engine is. Like,
yes,
the rotary is it's a weird engine. They came up with, you know, an interesting solution. And as Roland pointed out in the story, Mazda licensed this technology from NSU, and they developed it themselves, and they've kind of continued developing it. And we've ran stories for years now how there's been this small team within Mazda who are working on the rotary engine and who they're going to bring it back. And it seems like it's finally going to happen. And I'm still really worried that whether this is the right solution. And the reason that I'm worried is that, so the current MX-30, it has a 35.5 kilowatt hour battery, and that provides in the United States 100 miles of range.
That's like GM EV1 range.
Yeah.
Which I think was like 85 or 90 miles way back in the day. So yeah, I mean, that was one of the big criticisms of the MX-30 was that, okay, it seems pretty nice otherwise. It just doesn't, it needs more battery. It needs more range, right? So here we have a rotary option, which, to your point, Bruce, maybe this is a better application because you're going to have a small compact engine that runs extremely smoothly.
Right.
I don't know. Do we know the size of the rotary?
Nope.
I don't think that's available yet. So, I mean, if it's just a small rotary working as a generator powering the battery pack, I mean, if it's muffled down, it might make little to no sound. This with the smoothness of a rotary, it might be ideal as a range extender. But I guess my question is, okay, how much noise is it going to make?
We don't know.
And how much juice is it going to give the battery? And then how much fuel is it going to drink? Because
we don't know.
If you end up with, you know, having to fill up the tank on a regular basis, what's the difference? You know, what's the benefit of having an EV then, right? So yeah, there's still a lot we don't know.
No, we also don't know how much it weighs. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, another issue with the MX-30 is that it has its electric motor currently has 144 horsepower, 200 pound-feet of torque. It takes 9.6 seconds to get 0 to 60, which, you know, I am not saying that every vehicle should be a sports car and be like the Batista and get to 0 to 60 in sub 2 seconds. 9.6 seconds in the modern world, I feel like, is struggling to keep up when merging onto highway traffic. Mm-hmm. That's purely my opinion, and I'll admit that. But it's certainly on the higher end of things. Mm-hmm. And it's already not that quick of a vehicle. And now you are saddling it with an internal combustion engine, a fuel tank for that engine, a cooling system for that engine, mm-hmm. and all of the relevant accessories and things like that. And we don't know whether or not they are, you know, it's possible that having this extra juice from the range extender, maybe that they could increase the power from the motor and, you know, kind of offset that. But we don't know. And if they don't do that, then you've essentially added more weight, more complexity, more stuff to break, more everything on a vehicle that already seems compromised.
You make some valid points. I mean, my counterpoint, I guess, would be smoothness of the engine. The compact size of the engine.
That's the advantage of a rotary.
This could be, I mean, provided that the benefits are outweighing the consequences here. Mm-hmm. If it's pretty frugal on fuel, and they can keep weight to a minimum, and I mean, if they can bump this up to where you can go 250 miles or so at a mm-hmm. time. I mean, there's a lot we don't know. I guess at this point, I would just have to say to be continued. But it's interesting. And I mean, if you're a fan of the rotary, it is back. At least it's back in some form, right? How long before somebody gets one of these just to yank the rotary out and rotary swap a Mazda 3 or something, right? You know, so.
Or just like takes, 10 years time, these are in junkyard somewhere. You pull out the rotary range extender and you throw it in a go-kart and you've got, your little rotary go-kart that, if it makes 30 horsepower. I don't know. I'm literally making that number off
the top of my head. It says something about the situation that we're already thinking like long-term when we can yank the rotary out and put it into something else. Let's give the MX-30 with the range extender a chance to survive here first.
You're right.
And I'm very interested to see how this shakes out. Hopefully we'll have more information in early January when it debuts.
Exactly. We'll see it. The other thing is, thank you for mentioning that. We don't know whether the range extended version will come to the United States. I wrote up this story, a U.S. Exec, I believe it was in 2021, a U.S. exec said that they would like to have it here. But, who knows? That's been a year ago, and then plus by the time it enters production and things like that, who knows what's going to happen. So it's possible the one with the rotary range extender never even comes to the United States. We don't know.
Could be. To be continued.
It's an interesting vehicle. It's a compelling vehicle. It's something I want to know more about, but until we get to January and we actually get specs and ranges and, US availability and stuff like that, we kind of can just speculate about it right now, unfortunately.
So stay tuned. We'll have more to come. Of course, we'll talk about it when it comes out. Speaking of talking, that was actually a pretty decent segue, wasn't it?
Sure.
Speaking of communication, it's been a few weeks. We have a lot of emails. We have lots of comments to catch up on, and we're going to do it right now. We love you, Ramblers. We're at 395 subscribers. We're five away on YouTube. We are five away from me destroying my esophagus with a shot of super hot sauce. So subscribe if you haven't. Push us up over the limit so I can hopefully spend the Christmas holiday in the hospital saying, why did I do that? No.
Christmas, let's get there before that, man. Be more be more optimistic. We can get more than five subscribers in a month, I hope.
When we come back from Thanksgiving here, maybe that week, I'll be doing the shot of super hot sauce, much hotter than the one I did quite a while ago. We need to pick up some more subscribers. We have some views coming in. So if you're listening, hit the subscribe button on YouTube. Share it with your friends. Let them know that we're here. We love what we do. We love listening to the Ramblers, and we're going to do that right now. Let's start with some emails. What do you say, Bruce?
Perfect. That was exactly what I was going to suggest. I have our YouTube comments. I'm looking at them right now, but as you and I discussed before the show, I was having some tech issues and I couldn't get our email comments all at one time on one screen. So if you could handle that, let's do a couple of those and then we'll do the YouTube stuff.
Okay. Well, I'm going to jump back here way back to the end of October. Eric, we've got some emails here that we need to catch up on with you. Not quite back that far, Eric. I think you sent in another one.
He did. I know he did.
There we go. From November 16th. See, Eric, we hold on to this stuff. November 16th, Eric was catching up on some of our older episodes, which you can do on YouTube, podcastermotor1.com, or on Spotify, Apple, Google, if you want to listen to stuff online.
There you go, man. Yeah.
You can listen to us audio as well. Eric, we love the emails you send. Please keep sending them. We don't have the ability to talk about all of these here.
Eric, you write such... I'm looking at this email. Eric, I appreciate you, man. I read the whole email. Trust me, I read the whole thing. We cannot read out the whole thing, or this would be a two-hour episode. You write so much. Thank you.
No, it's great feedback. Hopefully it's making everybody out there think. Let me touch on some of these here. He was going back over episodes 89 and 90. That's back with the Mustang debut, Puro Sangue, Pagani, Chrysler 300C. Let me just read some of these here. Talking about the new Mustang, it looks cool and all, but I would honestly say I prefer the pre-facelift current gen. Has a Mustang owner and somebody that's not super involved, but aware of the automotive or the Mustang community, you're not the only one. A lot of people preferred the pre-facelifted model that came out in 2015 versus the one after that. Feedback that I've heard on the current one has been generally positive. We'll have to wait and see how that all plays out when it debuts. Of course, when you look at the sales figures, Mustang sales have just been sliding really for the last several years. So if you're a Mustang fan, hopefully the new one will turn that around. But you are not the only one to say I prefer the pre-facelifted current gen. Sure, the new one will get more power eventually, new powertrains. I will own a manual V8 coupe version of the previous gen. The Dark Horse is pretty cool, making the Mustang more appealing. The Dark Horse is cool, but I feel like it's Ford trying to play the Dodge game with the Challenger. And it's like, you don't have to create some super edition and just try to make it sound like a Hellcat or like a Scat Pack or something. Just do your own thing, Mustang. But anyways, it's definitely a cool vehicle. More appealing to a performance driving enthusiast, giving it great trackability straight from the factory. It looks menacing too. Now, Eric says, the Puro Sangue, the Ferrari SUV that isn't an SUV per Ferrari. And I agree for once, it's not an SUV. And Eric says, I can honestly say this is the best looking high riding vehicle, not an SUV. Thank you, Eric. I can think of, yes, it'll be quite a bit more expensive than the Urus, Bentayga, DBX, but the looks, the V12 engine make it worth it. Will probably be the best high riding vehicle to drive to. 725 horsepower doesn't even sound like much in these crazy days. Still beats all its rivals. You're right. 725 is like, oh, really? But that's a lot of power. It's hard to rationally justify not getting a Cayenne for anyone buying a high riding, high performance vehicle. You're not wrong there as well. In my mind, I think the Cayenne, the performance iterations of the Cayenne, they're still kind of setting the bar, I think, in a lot of ways. When I was talking with Aston Martin on the DBX 707, they continually referenced the Cayenne as something that they were looking at when they were tweaking and working on the 707. So, I mean, that's a very astute observation there. I'm going to jump ahead a little bit to talk about the Chrysler 300C.
Real quick, I have one thing I want to throw in from
Okay, Eric's go ahead. I'm just kind of talking away here. Go ahead.
Yep. So speaking of heavy things, and before that, he was talking about the new Mercedes-Benz C63E Performance. C63S E Performance. Yep. Sorry.
You mentioned
so
that
many
as well.
Letters in that name. Yep. But speaking of heavy things, he wants to talk about the Rentec S76R. Smith, I assume you remember that. That was when Rentec took an older Mercedes S-Class, threw a giant engine into it, and then it was just cool as hell.
Yeah, I remember it.
And he said, the attention to detail that has gone into this brutal machine is incredible, and I love it to bits. This is what I want from Mercedes. The only way that the parent company could beat it is to stick a V16 into a modern Mercedes S-Class and see what happens. The monoblock wheels have to go, though. Eric, you're wrong there, buddy. The monoblock
wheels. You're right. No. The monoblock wheels need to stay where they were.
Yeah. They look too blocky and don't match the performance that this car is capable of. But Eric, thank you so much, man.
Yeah, no, that I was going to read that here to close it out. So, Bruce, you beat me to the punch. I told you were going to steal some thunder. You stole my thunder back.
I guess that's good.
No, don't be sorry. Be proud. I got you, Smith. But I wanted to mention the 300C because I remember when that article came out, there were so many people in the comments just trashing on the car. And it's like, well, one, they're all sold out already. So bravo, Chrysler. You built a car that people wanted and they bought it.
Yeah.
Two, you could have just said, oh, hey, it's the 300C final edition and stuck a sticker on it and sent it out the door with the 5.7 liter Hemi. At least they went through and put the 6.4. So I'm pretty happy with what they did. They could have gone Hellcat, really sent it out with a bang. I think that would have been the only way to pick it up. But Eric says the Chrysler 300C is a bit underwhelming. Oh, sad face. They should have given it the Hellcat treatment. I would agree, but I think they did just fine with the 6.4. It's a formula they're already familiar with in that car. But again, all were bought, so I guess there was a market for a returning version of the facelift of a car from 2005. It did have a long life. The King Charger, the King Daytona Charger, has a great color and extra 10 horses. That was back when we were talking about the last call editions of the Charger. But not much else. I strongly prefer any Mustang or Camaro over those. With all of those going out, here's my take on that. With the Charger, the Challenger, the 300, the Hemi all bowing out, it could have been very easy for Chrysler, Dodge, the companies that are using the Hemi to just say, hey, these are the final editions, put a little sticker on, send them out. Going the extra bit, creating some interesting additions, doing some callbacks to, frankly, like stories that I'd never heard of, you know, with some of these cars, you know, some of the icons racing up and down Woodward Avenue in the 60s and 70s. I think it's a pretty cool thing that they did that. I think some automakers could take a hint or two, especially from Dodge, with a lot of the special editions they do. Love the special editions. There are so many special editions, and you know what? People like it.
I agree entirely. You know, we see a lot of like decal, trim, color packages, stuff like that. And I'm not taking away from any of the stylists out there that are putting that stuff together. But when you have a company that's willing to invest in the engineering, and you and I both know that, that that's even more money that you have to put into a vehicle in order to make that happen, that it makes me respect that company's, respect that company's dedication to performance even more. That mm-hmm. you're not just coming up with a special color, special trim, special stuff like that. You're actually putting, you know, parts that increase this vehicle's performance onto it. So,
yeah, no, I'm on board. Eric, I wish I could read more. We have two other emails that I'm going to go through here pretty quick before I drop it over to Bruce for some YouTube comments. I'm going to jump ahead to an email we got from Jonathan. This was just from the podcast last week where we were talking about the LA Auto Show debuts and specifically the Toyota Prius and how it's actually a rather surprisingly cool vehicle with some measure of performance. Jonathan says, great, entertaining show, guys. Thank you very much. I think Toyota has found their new styling language with the new Prius, just as Mercedes and BMW or Tesla all share styling language up and down their sedan lineup. Toyota found its latest and greatest styling language with the new Prius, and every sedan in their lineup needs to enlarge or shrink that styling language. Wouldn't hurt Lexus either. Anyways, guys, happy Thanksgiving. Love the podcast. You guys are great. Keep up the great work. Well, thank you, Jonathan. Thank you very much for listening and sending in this email. And I agree. I think, and we were talking about it last week, it's almost like the rest of the world caught up with the Prius in terms of hybrid and technology and trying to be some sort of futuristic vehicle. So Toyota said, we can just make the Prius normal now, right? And it's like when they decided to make it normal instead of make it just, you know, weird and different, which I think they did just for the sake of being kind of weird and different. I think they struck a really good formula. And I do hope to see more of that styling trickle down to other Toyotas. I'm really happy with the way the new Corolla looks. Even, you know, the standard version as well as the GR. I'm a fan of the Super styling. I complain a lot that Toyota was just a coach builder for BMW on that, but they created the design, right? So I think Toyota's doing pretty good with their styling right now.
I agree. Especially when you look at the Prius and the new Toyota Crown have a lot in common in terms of styling, especially in the front end. And then they're also I disagree with Jonathan in a very slight way that I don't like it when automakers take one shape and then kind of shrink or expand it depending on the model. Mercedes has done that for a while. And the issue is when you look at those vehicles on the road, you're like, oh, is that a C-class? No, that's an E-class, because you can't immediately quite tell. And from what it seems like, Toyota is doing kind of a smarter version of that in my mind. And what I mean by that is that the Prius, the Crown, the new BZ4X, the BZ3, which is going to be a China only and then eventually European only model, they have similarities, but it's not exactly the same. They're not just like stretching and shrinking and stuff like that for one single model. They're taking an idea and they're adapting it to different vehicles. So I think what they're doing right now is really smart, and I like it a lot.
No, you make a pretty good point there. And thanks, Jonathan, for emailing.
Oh, totally.
Us, sending this in. I'm going to jump to one more email. And Ted, if you're listening, and I hope you are, I hope you didn't think we were about to skip over you. I'm going to do a little screen share here because Ted, longtime listener, longtime commenter for Rambling About Cars, sent us some photos of a recent Radwood event.
Ooh, sexy Lotus.
That he went to with his daughter. Thank you for sending in photos and for telling us about it. We're going to go through the photos here in a minute. Let me read some of this email. Ted, I won't be able to read it all. Just we're starting to run a little bit short on time here. Ted and his daughter went to Radwood Atlanta, and I wanted to share first. I wanted to compare it to two other local Atlanta events. The wonderful and huge monthly one is the Main Caffeine and Octane, and it's a blast. This show has a ton of showings of show cars and a bazillion enthusiasts who come, making the parking lot walk almost as good and the showing cars lot. Has the showing cars lot. Sino is a crazy 3-hour whirlwind with a different highlighted focus each month, and then a bunch of random awesome to fill out the showing area. The highlight for me this year was seeing a V8 Holden Ute. My buddy had a Pontiac G8 GT, so this one hit home for me. The other event is CNO's Caffeine and Exotics, an annual show. It's currently postponed due to a weather issue, he says. And whereas I go regularly a couple times a year to CNO, I've only been to one of these, and it was smaller and more leisurely as well. The thing that struck me about Caffeine and Exotics, as well as Radwood, is that they have a fee to be admitted even as a spectator. CNO Main Monthly does not free to all. There's more to read here. I'm going to just jump over, Ted, to the photos that you sent in. We're going to go through just a few, not all of them. But as you're seeing here, we're looking at a pair of beautiful Lotus Esprits. Big fan of these cars. Green with the yellow wheels. But let's look here in the background. Look at that 320. I think that's a 328 sitting back there. Ferrari 328.
I'm pretty sure it's a 328. Yeah.
The side panels, it looks like the 308 successor, the 328. I could be wrong on that because we can only see really kind of the door. Heck, it could be a Fiero with a body kit with this angle. I'm going to assume with the caliber of vehicles here that it's a 328. Well, let's advance the photos here. We've got three photos that we're going to look at.
You were loving this picture before the show.
I was loving this picture earlier because, I mean, there's a really nice Fox body Mustang LX 5-liter hardtop. It's just a really clean car. It looks stock. You see so many of them that have just been modified to the hilt. This just looks like a really clean LX.
Wait real quick. Don't do anything real quick.
Okay.
So right behind it, for anyone who's watching on YouTube, to its back right, you can see an interestingly modified, because I don't think that wing is stock, Volkswagen Corrado.
Yep.
And I'm guessing that badge on the back on the front might mean it's a VR6. To the left of it, as you mentioned, there is I don't know if it's an M3 coupe or a Z3 coupe because I can't see the tail light.
But it's definitely a clown shoe BMW.
It is.
It's a clown shoe BMW. And to the left of
that, you were mentioning that there was a Datsun that missed.
Before we get there, I mean,
let's ignore the Ferrari. We don't need to talk about.
No. We can take a look at this beautiful Ferrari 348 that's sitting there next to the Mustang.
Yeah,
and then
there's a CRX right behind it.
A gorgeous CRX right there.
Oh, now I see the Datsun. Yeah, there it is.
You see one. That's what that looks like, a 280. A 280 ZX back there. And look at that Celica Supra sitting right there. That's going to be like an early 80s before the Supra was separated from the Celica. So that's going to be a Celica Supra. There's a 911. But I was thinking about this Datsun over here. T-tops, gold with brown. That thing looks beautiful. Ted, I am insanely jealous. I do not get
what I love about this show is that apparently just everything parks next to everything. So you literally have a Ferrari next to a CRX next to
a Mustang,
a Datsun next to a Mustang. Like it's
with a Mark II GTI in the background sitting next to a Corrado. Oh,
you're right. I missed that.
And then there's the headlights of an XJ6, a Jaguar XJ6.
Oh, back I was there. Thinking the one with the hood open. Is that a Cadillac?
That's it's either going to be an Oldsmobile or a Cadillac. I can't quite tell from that angle.
I don't have enough.
You got the clown shoe back there. That looks like an RX-7 behind the clown shoe.
Or maybe a Starion.
We're car spotting in your photos. You need to send us in more photos so we can do this. Totally. Nice a nice third gen
Camaro
sitting back there.
Yep.
Is that a
Nissan? Is that a
I can't tell exactly. Maybe Nissan, the next or picture.
Toyota?
Okay, no, that.
No.
Maybe the next.
We got a Mitsubishi Delica in the back.
Yeah, we're looking at a different picture now.
Three Mitsubishis in the back.
Front and center is a really nice third gen Firebird Formula.
Yep, and another Firebird behind.
With another one, I could see the tail end of a Fiero back there. And then behind there are a trio of two of them. No, that's all three. That's three. Oops. I clicked off the photo. I'm so excited. That's three Mitsubishi, little Mitsubishi cab over vans.
Yep.
From I think that's going to be what, the late 80s, I think.
Maybe the one on the far left is early 90s, but the other two, I think, are late 80s. Yeah,
they're about. So, yeah, Ted, thanks much for sending that into us. If you have photos of events that you go to, send it in to podcast@motor1.com. We will totally go car spotting with you. Thanks for all the emails. Bruce, I'm going to toss it over to you to go through some of our YouTube comments.
Yep. So I'm going to go in order here. This is from Gino Nix. And Gino, I don't think we've heard from you for a while, so thank you very much for commenting on this. And this was on the episode where my dad was the co-host. And he said, really enjoyed hearing your stories with your dad. Now I understand your passion, where your passion for cars comes from. And the story with your grandmother smacking your dad on the road was priceless. Keep it up. I agree. Ted Adam Green, we were just literally talking about you. This was our episode talking about the new Honda Accord, the Volvo EX90, and the Audi Q8. And he said, great ramble. So glad Smith lived through his rough riding move. And U-Haul is a good friend to you wherever you need. My prediction is that the last four somewhat affordable internal combustion engine sedans left standings will be the Honda Accord, the Honda Civic, the Toyota Camry, and the Toyota Corolla. He might be right there. Seems that everyone else is leaving this market. I'm unsure if the EVs will be sedans and whether they'll be affordable ones. Good luck to Smith on the cheap car challenge. Can't wait to see what you get. The Audi e-tron branding has been confusing, but the change to a model name will help, I think. My question for the week is to ponder, will we even get to see the ultimate EV commuter car? And my question of the week is to ponder this. Will we even get what I think is the ultimate EV commuter car? Mm-hmm. Sorry, I skipped a word there. So $35,000, 350 miles of range, 350 horsepower, 3 to 5 doors, sub 6 second 0 to 60, and a hatchback. I think that'll happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll certainly happen. The question is, when will it happen? And I think that'll happen fairly soon.
The $35,000 is the sticking part, because that these days is even less than the average car. If we said $40,000, I think 2 years, honestly. No?
Yeah, okay. I could... I, you know what, it depends on how quickly prices fall on batteries, the various electrical components, and those prices will fall as EVs become more populous throughout the automotive industry. Will it fall in time to still meet that market? I guess maybe I don't know. I'm trying to think of cars right now that might be close to that.
I mean,
juice up a Nissan Leaf and you're almost there.
Or, I mean, right? 5 years from now, a used Mach-E, a base Mach-E.
But are we talking used? New or used? Because, I mean, used.
He's saying new. No, okay, no. New, to be fair.
Yeah.
But I'm just trying to think, like, getting to all of those numbers. Because the issue is, unfortunately, the economy right now, we're going through inflation. I don't know how many cars are going to be $35,000 for that long. And you know,
speaking of somebody that's trying to buy just a decent used car right now, prices suck right now.
Yeah.
Prices are terrible. So we'll have to, you know, I think maybe that's something that'll be decided in the next year or two. Maybe. I don't think we'll see one in the next couple of years at that price point.
I think you could, all of those other things are doable. The price is the sticking point. Mm-hmm. 350 miles of range, I think is doable. 350 horsepower, I think is very doable. 3 to 5 doors, doable. Less than 6 seconds, 0 to 60, doable. A hatchback and handy, doable. It's just that $35,000 part. It's going to be rough for right now.
If somebody were to come out with that in a couple of years, I think it would be just a tremendous hit. But
oh God, yes.
we'll have to wait and see on that one. We'll have to wait and see on that one.
Let me read one more comment and then we'll kind of go into our final segment for the night. Does that sound good?
Yep.
So this is from our buddy Josiah. Josiah has been a frequent commenter and we love having him. And thank you so much, Josiah. So it's great to have Chris back. He is referring to you, not to me. and it always makes for epic podcasts. Just like the current Civic, I initially thought the new Honda Accord was understyled, but I'm very convinced that the low-key design will grow on me. That might be due to the fact that I'm just a diehard Honda fan, but I don't mind it one bit. Also, with that knockout interior and tech, what really can you argue about it at that price point? I saw that the Accord's competitor, the Kia K5 and the Hyundai Sonata, are going away. That hit me. I have an intense connection to the K5. I think it's one of the best styled cars of its type ever. Keep rambling. And it kind of goes exactly to what you said, is that we're losing traditional sedans that, mm-hmm. you know.
I'm with you. I've talked to quite a few people that didn't really like the way the Sonata looked. I thought it's an interesting design. I don't know that I call it beautiful, but I liked it enough to be like, okay, I wouldn't mind picking up one of these if I could find one in stock somewhere, which was always a challenge. Same for the K5. I think the K5 looks fantastic.
Totally. Definitely.
I think I've said it before. Hyundai seems to just be nailing it with styling, not maybe on every vehicle, but I think they're doing a lot better than some other brands. So yeah, great insight. But before we move on, Bruce, can I read one quick comment here?
Of course you can.
This was from last week and I hope I don't butcher your username here. I'm going to say it's Nahidra Man. I think if I got that wrong, completely throw me under the bus. But the comment is, you missed updating us on the search for Smith's new daily. So
I read this comment. Yep.
It's true. And I apologize. We had a lot to talk about last week. I'm still searching. That's the update. I'm changing my criteria just a little bit because I'm thinking instead of just something small and simple, maybe something a little bit larger, because I do have family members now that for the first time in my life, I'm thinking, oh gosh, maybe I need some sort of family vehicle. Because my parents are right here in the area that I don't think they're going to be driving much longer. So we'll have something a little bit bigger to take them around. They're doing good right now. So I've been looking more at minivans and crossovers. I'm kind of sorry to say, although I did find a 2004 or 2005 Chrysler Sebring convertible with 60,000 miles. That's in my price range. And it's like, well, we could get another convertible for the winter. But no, it's still an ongoing process. There are a couple of vehicles that are on my radar. I'm trying to stay just relatively close because I'm shopping 4,000 and under.
Right.
And that's not nearly as lucrative a segment for, finding a decent cheap car than it used to be.
Despite you moving to a more populous area, there still aren't that many cars that you would want your wife driving.
Not just her. I mean, she can handle stuff. I don't want to spend $4,000 on a 15-year-old car with 250,000 miles. Right. Sure. And especially in Michigan, this is a very bad area for rust. So the older you get, the more you're running into some pretty serious rust issues. So I'm really trying to just be patient and find something that I think is going to be good. Prices are pretty insane just everywhere in the area. And I've even stretched the area out. It's not as easy as it used to be. I'm a little disappointed. I'm not finding you're not going to find, a 3-year-old car with 40,000 miles in this price range. Of course not.
No.
But I am not putting down $4,000 for a 15-year-old 250,000 mile car that's rusted and worn out. I'm just not going to do it. So I'll be biding my time, but the search continues. Thanks much for asking. I'll keep you all updated. We've got a little bit of a interesting closing segment, Bruce.
We do. Yeah. Let's. Yeah. Do you want to go? Well, here, I'll introduce it. So this will be our episode for Thanksgiving. If you, you know, you celebrate that holiday, if you're in the United States and that's something that you do, you're welcome to it. I will be. I know Smith will be. You're actually have a special one this year. You said it's going to be your first one with your direct family for
almost a decade.
Only 5 years. Oh, okay. Almost a decade.
Almost even a decade. Because we've been out in South Dakota and we generally didn't travel for the holidays. I mean, it's 1,200 mile one-way trip.
It's a haul, man.
And it just it never really worked out. So yeah, this will be the first one with family for me in quite a long time. But Bruce, why don't you go ahead, go first. We're going to talk about what in the automotive world we are thankful for.
So this is interesting. For anyone who listens to the show, I think it was roughly a month ago. It was roughly a month ago that my wife and I, we bought a 2023 Subaru Outback. It's her primary car that she takes to work. It will be our road trip car. And I honestly, I am so impressed by how much automotive adaptive safety systems have progressed in the last decade. And it's not that I haven't driven newer cars than that. I've driven several newer cars than that, Buicks and Hondas and all sorts of other stuff. But owning one and having it as my daily driver in and out and having it as her daily driver and her getting that experience with it, just like the various sensor systems, because we have a 2006 Mini Cooper and a 2012 Subaru Outback, which don't feel like that old of cars. But then once we've driven this new Subaru, the fact that it has adaptive cruise control, it has lane keep assist, it has all sorts of sensors and stuff like that, I just feel like I feel so much more secure when she or I am driving it, because just this, it's not that you can't pay attention. It's not, you're still paying total attention to the road. I'm not saying that, but it's just this extra little thing keeping you safe. And I appreciate that a lot. And it, you know, there are a lot of times where I'm not driving and, you know, it's just her or it's just me and the dog or something like that. And it, I just appreciate it so much. And so I guess what I'm thankful for is the last 10 years of progression of automotive safety assist systems.
That's a very good point. I agree totally. I wasn't thinking that way at all, but I'm glad you mentioned that. And I know there will be listeners saying, ah, there's too much crap in a car. I don't need those systems. They make things that they'll make you a worse driver because you won't pay attention.
No, but
that's not it at all. Trust me, because I kind of felt that way too until I started driving some of the newer cars. Bruce, you hit it exactly on the head. For all of those that aren't really into all of these various systems, imagine how you feel when you have somebody in the passenger seat that's just as alert as you are.
Right.
You feel a little more, not necessarily confident, you feel a little bit more secure behind the wheel knowing that your wingman or your wingwoman sitting right there, they are just as observant as you are. If you should happen to miss something, they're going to catch it.
So
that's what these systems can do when you're by yourself and road warriors who have it all dialed in. Odds are once you're in a vehicle with these systems, you're going to notice from time to time, oh, the wheel just tugged. I was drifting off the side of the road. I didn't catch it right away. It might show you that you're not paying as much attention as you think you are. So yes, I'm with you 1,000%. These systems can only do good. And that's why we're seeing them on more vehicles and more mandates for them.
Let me add one last thing to that, just to clarify the picture. I grew up in a family where both my mom, you know, my dad would do a lot of the long distance driving. But, you know, my mom would sometimes too. I was obviously too young at that point in time. But like if he was merging onto the interstate, my mom would be watching, and just by my own kind of thing, I would kind of learn to start watching too and be like, oh no, you're clear. Go ahead, merge on, you're fine. I didn't realize that wasn't a thing until I was a teenager, when I had like friends riding in the car and they weren't necessarily looking. And it's not that I wasn't looking, but you look over your shoulder and you can only see so much. And what these systems do is that they kind of double that thing, is that they, you know, it's that person sitting beside you. It's that person sitting in the back and they're like, oh no, you're, yeah, there's nothing behind you. You know, they have that extra perspective and they can see you're clear to move over. You're clear to do whatever. And that's what it feels like. It's not that it's not a crutch. It's not that, oh, the car is driving for me.
So
it's
I don't have this, to. No, that's no, not no. It at all.
Right. It's that there's this sensor here that is duplicating that person in the back seat who would be like, there's someone farther off who you might not see in your mirror or something like, oh, there's someone coming up quick or something like that. That's what it's doing. And it's so useful because most of the time when you're driving, it's my wife and I, you know, it's, I don't have someone in the back seat or something like that, that it, it's just this extra little, this ghost, quote unquote,
it's an extra layer. It's an extra layer.
Right.
And God forbid you get into a situation where something runs out in front of you and you have to react quick with those automated systems with the emergency braking, the auto emergency braking.
Right. I was that run into that. All of my stuff is the blind spot, the stuff kind of the stuff that you can't quite see behind you. I haven't run into the stuff in front of you issue yet, but you're right.
That's going to respond quicker than you will probably.
Right.
Yeah. And I mean,
the deer that runs out
one or two feet could make a difference. So yeah, no, bravo, totally. Bruce. Yeah. Bravo, Bruce, for saying that. What am I thankful for? There are so many things. I'm thankful for the evolution of vehicles. So, sort of what you're just talking about here, Bruce, I might get flamed a little bit for this, but when there are things like higher fuel prices or other crises that are forcing you to kind of think in different directions, push things in different directions, that's when you get innovation. As much as people like to complain about the 70s and the advent of emission systems and all that, it forced automakers to do better. Yeah. And because of that, we have the most powerful vehicles. If you want to look at it from a performance standpoint, we have the most powerful vehicles that have ever been available, while also being the safest vehicles ever available, while also being supremely cleaner than ever in terms of emissions. So I am grateful that we still have the outside stimulus that's forcing change, because when things don't change, they die. That's true for everything. So I am thankful for that. I wanted to mention that because what I'm really thankful for are the Ramblers, you listening right now, watching. And I'm not, this isn't a cheap ploy either, because I had a marketing career that I was pretty happy with. And then I started writing for Motor One just on the side. I've always written stuff on the side since 2006, 2007, thereabouts. And then I went full time with Motor One. And like 5 years later, I'm doing a podcast with a very cool co-host. And even in the early days, Bruce, when John Neff was still here, and it was really just kind of a straight shooting. It was just the Motor One podcast. We're talking about it. You and I were usually the guests with John because everybody else was really busy. So it just kind of morphed into, okay, let's do something different. You and I are doing it. I thoroughly enjoy talking about cars once a week with you. And I thoroughly enjoy, and I mean it from the bottom of my heart, sharing it with all of the listeners out there. So we're at 395 subscribers on YouTube. If there was 2 subscribers on YouTube, I would still love it. If there were 2 people listening and sending in comments and telling us what they think, I would still love it. So thank you to everybody that's listening, that puts a little bit of time aside to hear us ramble, because let's be honest, we freaking ramble sometimes, right?
We do. I mean,
we've had some pretty good conversations. So I am thankful for you for letting us continue to do this, to give us a little bit of a platform just to talk about cars and have some fun.
Yeah.
No. And I will drink to that.
Real quick, also, I want to throw out that we've got some guests
tentatively
lined up. I'm pulling one up now just to double check. I believe it's December 7th, but I don't want to say that without
being I believe it is too. And it's a guest that's been on the show before with somebody else.
Yep. I just double checked it. We have a guest tentatively for December 7th. And then also we have not that he's not a returning guest, but we have another guest coming up for Motor One Star Awards. And Smith, you and I have talked about doing some different stuff just between ourselves next year. I want to make it happen. And this is regards to our car movie stuff that you and I have kind of mumbled about. I want to make that happen next year. We'll see how things go. But I agree. I'm really thankful for this show. Like, folks out there, you have to understand that this is a labor of love. We love doing this show every week. It is
9 p.m. Tuesday as we're doing this right now. And it's I can say that proudly because I'm in the same time zone now as Bruce.
You are. Yeah. But I would kind of do this regardless. I enjoy this stuff. So
thank you.
Very good.
Thank you, everyone.
Happy Thanksgiving to everyone who celebrates. I hope you enjoy it with family, whether that means actual, you know, family who is actually your family, whether that's friends, whether that's loved ones, whatever that family means to you. I hope you have a very, very good Thanksgiving. We will be back next week, though. We don't miss a week. I promise you, if it's just me, we will be back for Christmas because we haven't missed a show, and damn it, we're not going to miss a show. So have a happy Thanksgiving. We really appreciate you guys. Please send us your comments. And as always, good afternoon, good evening, or good night. I need to come up with a new thing. Like, I feel like that's getting old. And
you know what? If you want to come up with something new, start the new. I'll have something new. I won't be sane without further ado after December 2022. So 2023, deal. All new intros and outros.
I'm coming up with a new outro for 2023. I have to decide what it is, but I'm coming up with a new outro. Damn it.
There you go.
Because it's just gotten stale for me. It feels like it doesn't mean anything to me anymore, whereas it did at one point. Thank you so much to everyone who listens to this, and we will be back next year, and we'll be back throughout the month of December. So it's not like this is the end of the show, but, have a happy Thanksgiving. We love all of you. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.